It was a desperate progress. In the stern sheets of a cutter, among his honor guard of marines, squatted a doughy paymaster, an iron-bound box cradled in his ample lap. Trailing in his wake, a fleet of tawdry bumboats, the hungry faces of the merchants eyeing the paymaster as though he were a scrap of food. And astern of these, a motley squadron of fishing craft and lighters of all descriptions, their rouged passengers clinging anxiously to the gunwales. Non-swimmers, the lot.
"Cleopatra's barge carried no one as comely as you, darling," a grinning, pockmarked sailor called from the deck of a ship to one of the girls, only to find a bosun's rattan smacking down around his ears.
Hayden gazed at the poor women who followed the paymaster, expecting to ply their trade among the briefly moneyed seamen. An hour earlier, he had been in the company of Henrietta Carthew, and these fallen creatures who were being ferried out to slake the thirst of sailors seemed of a different species altogether. It occurred to him that if not for the luck of birth, his own Henrietta... No, it was unthinkable. His spirits lowered ineffably, and Hayden looked away, gazing around Plymouth Harbour. A drab, windless day, November chilled, sea leaden and heaving in a slow, ponderous rhythm. His boat passed into the Hamoaze, and the midshipman in nominal charge tore his gaze away from the whore's fleet, suddenly remembered Hayden, and smiled embarrassedly. "A sad metaphor of our English way of life, I fear," Hayden offered, nodding towards the paymaster's progress, which disappeared at that moment behind the point. But the young gentleman did not seem to grasp the jest. The powder hoy passed at that moment, and the midshipman turned his back to it, hunching his shoulders visibly, as though prepared to receive a blow. Hayden noticed the coxswain, an old seaman, suppressing a smile, and Hayden did the same. If the powder hoy were to explode so near, turning one's back would not offer protection. Hayden gazed down the river where every kind of craft imaginable either lay to a mooring or made its way through the still water. War had shaken the dockyards and surrounding waters out of everyday dullness into a sudden fever of excitement and motion. The towns of Plymouth and Dock swarmed with sailors, with the massive drays of enriched victuallers, with marines, red-coated and red-faced. Herds of moaning bullocks blocked up the lanes, stalling wagons from the ordnance board. And all about and underfoot campaigned delighted boys, waving wooden swords and firing imaginary muskets, as the frenetic commerce of war spilled out of the offices of the Navy Board and into the noisome streets.
"There she is, sir, the Admiral's flagship,"
the midshipman offered, with no trace of irony. Hayden turned to gain a view of the Hamoaze, and the 80-gun guardship, Cambridge, from which the Port Admiral executed the duties of his office. It seemed a strange affectation that a Port Admiral must have a ship and not an office in a building ashore. Certainly he had a rather elegant residence supplied by the Admiralty. The affectation was not carried so far as to cause him actual discomfort. Hayden had, for some time, been contemplating the meaning of his summons, but tried to put this worrisome activity to rest. All would be revealed in the fullness of time, and worry would change nothing.